Welcome to the Sadler Lectures podcast. Responding to popular demand, I'm converting my philosophy videos into sound files you can listen to anywhere you can take an MP3. If you like what you hear and want to support my work, go to patreon.com/sadler. I hope you enjoy this lecture. In his Prolegomena to Any Future Metaphysics, near the end of the first part of the main transcendental question, in Remark 3, Immanuel Kant is going to tackle the question of illusion, shine, and truth, Wahrheit, right? And usually we would oppose falsity to truth, but here he's opposing illusion, being mistaken about something. He'll also use the word Irrtum at a certain point in this discussion, error, right? Going astray. And he begins this remark by saying, there's an accusation that's being made against my philosophy by our admitting the ideality of space and time. The whole sensible world would be turned into a mere illusion. The term there is a shine, right? So it's not just an illusion as opposed to a truth, but the entire sensible world becomes just a figment of our imagination. And this is, you know, an accusation of a certain kind of idealism, as he's going to talk about in this remark. And this is a very common criticism that is made by certain critics of Immanuel Kant. I mean, we could say that perhaps they were less attentive readers of the Critique of Pure Reason who got this wrong, and Kant is responding to them, but he could also be responding to people all the way down to the present who are, let's say, less excusable as inattentive, sloppy, ideologically biased readers of Kant. You can disagree with Kant and say, he's got some of these things wrong, but you actually do have to get correct what it is that he's saying, and you do have to take into account, you know, clear statements of what he, in fact, does believe or endorse or doesn't. So the people who are out there in the present saying, oh yes, Kant, you know, reduces the whole sensible world to mere illusion. We lose our track of things. We don't have any sort of realistic relation to objects. Well, those are kind of off base. And Kant has responses to them as well. And he begins with something that he calls a correction. And the idea here is that previous philosophers have been getting something wrong. And who does he have in mind here? I would say that this certainly applies to the rationalist tradition. We see Descartes and Leibniz making statements like this about sensibility. I would say this also applies to the empiricist tradition as well. So in their view, as he says it, philosophical insight into the nature of sensuous cognition was spoiled. Why? By making sensibility merely a confused, verworrene, mode of representation. The German text actually just says representation, Vorstellung, right? So according to this, we still know things as they are, but without being able to reduce everything in this representation to a clear consciousness. So when I'm sensing something, I am representing it to myself in my mind, but in a less clear way than, say, pure logic or, you know, mathematics or anything that could be relations of ideas, as David Hume was calling them. And then he says, whereas, on the contrary, proof is offered by us that sensibility consists not in this logical distinction of clearness, Klarheit, or obscurity, Dunkelheit, again, terminology that's being used by earlier modern philosophers, but rather in the genetic one of the origin of cognition itself. Where are the cognitions coming from? What faculties are actually providing us with these? And how are we related to an external world through these cognitions, these Erkenntnisse, of what we seem to be thinking of as real things? So he goes on and he says, sensuous perception represents things not at all as they are, but only in the mode in which they affect our senses. So by sensuous perception, we get appearances and not things themselves. And these are given to the understanding for reflection. So important point being made here. And Kant is saying, don't mix me up with these people over here that have got this wrong. Does that get him off the hook? Not entirely. So he has to address this in another way. And notice what he's just said here, that sensuous perception represents things in the way that they affect our senses. They're given to the understanding then for reflection. So in all of our perception, we really have two different faculties that are working hand in hand. We have sensibility, which includes our senses and, you know, putting things together. We get impressions coming in or appearances. And then we have the faculty of understanding, Verstand, which judges that, right? So the appearance is given to us through sensibility, and then the understanding engages in judgment, Beurteilung in German, and Beurteilung is the other term that he uses here for judgment, which is not quite the same thing as Urteil, right? But it's sort of an intensification of it. So he goes on and he tells us, when an appearance is given to us, we are quite free as to how we should judge the matter. Now, to anybody who's a reader of modern philosophy, this ought to remind you very much of René Descartes' Meditation 4, where he's trying to distinguish how we actually fall into error and how we mix up truth and falsity. Here, it's truth and illusion. And it has to do not with the sensibility itself, but rather with the understanding and the use that we make of our understanding, which we are free to do. Right? So this is going to allow him to make all sorts of great distinctions and observations about different ways we fall into illusion. And again, we can see a reference here to René Descartes, the truth and dreaming. So he tells us that the difference between truth and dreaming is not ascertained by the nature of the representations, which are referred to objects, because they're the same in both cases, right? So when we're dreaming, we are, you know, let's use Descartes' example. I dream that I'm sitting in my room in a chair before the fire that I see flickering, and I've got these sensations that are going on. We take that for real while we're dreaming, but it's not really real, not just because we're imagining something that isn't happening, but because there's something lacking. And again, we see this in both Descartes' Discourse and the Meditations. He comes to a resolution of this, and Kant's solution of this is kind of similar. It's not ascertained by the nature of the representations, which are referred to objects, but by their connection, their Verknüpfung, how they're tied together, linked together, according to those rules which determine the coherence, Zusammenhang, how things hang together, the coherence of the representations in the concept of the object, and ascertaining whether they can subsist together in experience or not. You know, as we've talked about quite a few other people, as you know, Sigmund Freud, in his famous work on the interpretation of dreams, will point out, not, you know, originally, because many other people pointed this out, dreams have their own weird logic, which is not that of waking states. And Kant is saying, you know, in this case, the connection, the coherence is different in the dream than it is in our waking state. And so this is how we can essentially tell the difference between those. We don't have to fall into illusion of taking our dreams as being true. Then he talks about another sort of modality of illusion. He says that it's not the fault of appearances if our cognition takes illusion for truth. That is, if the intuition by which an object is given us, so the object there is Objekt, right? Some the object of the intuition being given to us in senses is taken for something more than it is, taken for the concept of the thing, the Begriff vom Gegenstände, right? The concept of something that exists as an object for us, or even as the thing existing, the existence of that thing. So we can go wrong by saying the appearances, the representations are providing us more than they are, and we do this by an improper use of our understanding applied to that intuition. And he's got an example here. The senses represent to us paths of the planet is now progressive, now retrogressive. Therein is neither falsehood nor truth, because as long as we're just observing and we're taking this to be appearance, we're not judging, We're not making a judgment of the objective nature of their motion. But if we start saying, well, they move backwards, it's not the senses which must be charged with illusion, but the understanding whose province alone it is to make an objective judgment on appearances. So again, not an absolutely new doctrine here. We see this in many other philosophers that the senses themselves don't deceive us. It's rather the use that, in this case, Kant says our understanding will make of the appearances that it's been given, and that's our using our faculty of understanding to make wrong-headed judgments. So if we want to avoid illusion, and Kant says we can do this even if we're not like investigating the origin of our representations, right? He says, whenever we connect our intuitions of sense in space and time, according to the rules of the coherence of all cognition and appearance, illusion or truth will arise according to whether we are negligent, unbehutsam, or careful, vorsichtig, right? Attentive is another way of thinking about it. So we have control over that as well. We can pay attention or we can be lackadaisical about it and then get tricked. So he's going to go on and talk about the use of sensuous representations or intuitions in the understanding. Now notice that he says in the understanding. So not just by the understanding, but within the understanding, which is part of us, right? Making use of representations or appearances in reference to possible experience. So if we go beyond the boundaries of possible experience, like he says, if I venture to go beyond all possible experience with my concepts of space and time, which I cannot refrain from doing if I do certain metaphysical moves, if I proclaim them at qualities inherent in things in themselves, then a grave error, irrtum, may arise due to illusion. I proclaim to be universally valid what is a merely a subjective condition of intuition of things, and certain only for all objects of sense, for all possible experience, erfahrung, empirical experience that I can actually have. So if we stay within the realm of possible experience, well, we're not going to get into so much trouble, right? If we don't do that, then we can actually fall into what he's calling transcendental illusion. And he talks about this as we get closer to the end. He tells us that if we don't adopt my point of view on the ideality of space and time, then we're inevitably going to wind up in the transcendental illusion. And he says, what is this transcendental illusion done? Metaphysics has been deceived hitherto up to this point and misled into childish efforts of catching at bubbles. Why? Because appearances, which are mere representations, are taken for things in themselves. We can't access the things in themselves through sensibility. We can't do it through the understanding either, because the understanding applies to matters of possible experience. If we are going to think about the things in themselves, it's going to be a different faculty that's going to handle that. And so we don't want to mix up sensibility or understanding with these sorts of things, because if we do, why is it called the transcendental illusion? He says that appearance, as long as it's employed in experience, produces truth. The moment it transgresses, goes beyond the bounds of experience, and consequently becomes transcendent, it produces nothing but illusion, right? So if we want to avoid illusion, then Kant is saying, hey, that is up to us. It's within our control whether we fall into illusion or not. It helps to have some information, he thinks, right? Otherwise, very smart people do fall into these illusions, you know, Descartes, for example, or he mentions Berkeley as well. But if we have this information, Kant says, hey, it's smooth sailing after this, provided we make proper use of our understanding and we're actually paying attention to how things are and how they ought to be, rather than being negligent or being sloppy or lazy in our thinking about these matters. So, ways of avoiding all sorts of illusions. Kant is saying, I'm not, turning the world into illusion. It's actually those guys over there who are making mistaken metaphysics that actually doesn't even deserve to be called such. And his approach that he outlines in the Critique and also within the Prolegomena will help us to avoid falling into these errors or illusions.
Special thanks to all of my Patreon supporters for making this podcast possible. You can find me on Twitter at Philosopher70, on YouTube at the Gregory B. Sadler channel, and on Facebook on the Gregory B. Sadler page. Once again, to support my work, go to patreon.com/sadler. Above all, keep studying these great philosophical works.